Welcome to Writing the Wrong Way, where we talk about how writing works, how writers work, and why the best writers risk being strange. And here today we have guests who've been here before, Leonard Radchenko, frequent visitor of the podcast and one of the co-conspirators at Stranger Fiction, and Zach Schuster, who has also been on the podcast before and has done number of other great projects. We talked to Zach about Thrud. If you go back and listen to the episode where Zach discusses Thrud, and we've talked to Lennon about some of his other projects, but today, we're talking to them both about their co-created project, their book Hero Man, which is coming out of At Bay Press in May. You can probably pre-order it somewhere now. So I would say pre-order it now, but certainly at your site, right, Lyndon? It would probably
pre-orders right now are up on McNally, Indigo, Amazon, and I do not yet have them on my website.
Sure, and then At Bay Press will have, of course, they'll be able to take orders at some point if they're not already. And then, it's a great book. I really love. So this, but just quickly, division of labor here is that Lyndon is writer and letterer. Zach is the artist. I'm sure you guys are also co-creating the story on some level. But maybe you can talk just a little bit about kind of where this whole project came from and how you were working on it, and just sort of what you've been up to recently. I know you went on a trip to promote it in France there. So it'd be great just to sort of hear a little bit about maybe kind of how that trip went and then backpedal into kind of where this book came from.
Zach, how was France?
France was very cool. Leonard and I went to Angoulême, which is a town in France that gets taken over by a huge comic expo, the International Festival of Bande Dessinée Comics in French. And we were there promoting our book. So we had advanced copies printed that weren't quite final, but the full book is coming out, like it was said, in May. We went to France as part of a delegation for Canada, which was a weird, huge honor. Met a lot of cool creatives, saw a lot of very cool things. It was a very good trip.
Yeah, it's really funny. It's really funny talking about this international comics festival that we were invited to for our book, because this is not in any way a serious book. This is a funny book. And while we were there, we kept being introduced as superhero comics makers, which is like the exact opposite, one, of what we are, and two, of what we want to be when we're there, because no one likes superhero comics in Europe as a general rule. And so the fact that the book that we were making, or that we were pushing, effectively makes fun of superhero comics was this weird sort of dichotomy that we were living while we were over there.
Can you talk a bit more about, before we get into the kind of details of it, the backstory of it, what exactly the book is then? Because I could see why people would say, they're doing superhero comics, but it is and it isn't, right? Like, it's this kind of parodic book, as you say, making fun of superhero comics. It has this throwback style and so on. Can you just talk a bit more detail about what it is?
Yeah, so on one hand, the Hero Man is a book about sort of our love of classic comic books, but it's also a sort of reflection on the ridiculousness of the tropes that go along into comics and popular culture. So for the listener who's not familiar, Hero Man is a book that is about a superhero named Hero Man in the city of Citiesville, who discovers that the mayor of the town has been using his presence as a superhero to sort of drive up tax revenue and increase tourism in their city, and has been hosting staged or fake crimes to give Hero Man something to do. And so when Hero Man discovers this, our adventure begins. And we use the vehicle of this book to reference and make fun of a lot of the classic tropes that we know from superhero comics gone by. For example, when we started this, Zach and I decided that every single crime committed in this book would be a bank robbery. because we couldn't think
That's
of any
great.
other classic crimes that superheroes would prevent. So that sort of is an example of the sort of golden age parody effect that we put sort of through a real life cynical retrospective lens through the duration of this entire book.
Feels of a
I'd say
kidnapping, which is almost the only other thing you would have in those Golden Age comics, right? It would be kidnapping or it'd be a bank robbery. Yeah, exactly.
don't you worry. There's a kidnapping. But I would say when Lyndon says cynical, that's maybe not the right word, as we have all these dark and gritty parodies like Kick-Ass, like The Boys, and even those we were kind of sick of. Like we're at a point with superhero comics, I think societally we're even sick of the parodies now. We're not just sick of the superhero comics, we're sick of the gritty
Commentary on
reboots and
superhero comics,
the
yeah.
commentary, and like we're sick, we're up to our ears in it. And so this book we made even more, which I'm not sure was the right
The
answer,
tone's
but we made
different,
more.
as you say.
And the tone is super goofy and light and Silver Age as opposed to 90s gritty nonsense, which we like some of that nonsense, but we can all agree there's a lot of it. And we wanted to throw back to a kind of a different, simpler, sillier era.
Yeah, there's
No more
this like
Adam West
level
Batman.
of earnestness to it and like heartfelt commitment to justice and all the sort of highlights of those classic comics that we really leaned into rather than just a, you know, like another telling of the Watchmen or that sort of superheroes in real life lens, because that's definitely not what we're looking at.
Yeah, at the same time, you do have an awareness of the Watchmen. There's a Watchmen thing in the background in one panel that I noted. It's funny you bring up the Watchmen, because what I always say about these new, more cynical parody comics is, they can be great, but none of them are better than the Watchmen. And you kind of had this peak of what that was, and then it was influential to the point where it kind of birthed these weird parodies of the thing it was parodying. It's a really curious cultural development there. And again, some of that stuff is great, don't get me wrong, but it's refreshing to see a book like Hero Man that is a bit more, I mean, it has an
Zany.
awareness. Yeah, it's more zany. But that Silver Age, I feel like that Silver Age, it has that Silver Age nostalgia level as well. And like, there's kind of a, as you say, it's got an affection for these comics in a way where I sometimes feel like the darker, more cynical parodies don't. Like sometimes when I'm looking at these books, I think to myself, I get it. It's good, but also I kind of wonder why they're even making a superhero comic at all if they hate them so much. You know what I mean? And so I kind of feel like your book is, I think, in sort of in between parody and pastiche. Like I wrote a book called John Pease's Crime Wave, which is an academic book, but very much like the thrust of that book is about this distinguishment between parody and pastiche, where you have in pastiche, you're using the forms and the styles of an older media in order, but you're just replicating them. And in parody, you're doing that in order to make fun of it and criticize the original. And I feel like you're not really in either position. Like you're sort of in this in-between space where there's a level where, yes, you're parodying some of the actually more the things of modern comics through the Silver Age lens. Like there's a moment where what's her name, Femme Fatale, gets put into a standard superhero costume, and she comments on how ridiculous this costume is. No woman in charge of her costume would ever wear this costume, to fight crime. That's actually in many ways not a criticism of the Silver Age of comics, right? That's a criticism of like recent, more 90s even, to now kind of comics age, ways that the characters would have their costume designed in this salacious manner. But it's placed inside the Silver Age, kind of style, even though it doesn't really parody that Silver Age element. So I think it's really an interesting complexity there that you're accomplishing, pretty quickly and simply and in this kind of fun, light, zany tone.
Yeah, she was, I think, a lot of fun as a character. As she's the only one in the book who's not just kind of an idiot. She's just pretty good at being a superhero and pretty smart. And Hero Man and his sidekick, Hero Lad, are idiots. Hero Lad, it's okay, he's an idiot because he's like a kid and he'll probably grow out of it. But Hero Man is really dumb. He was tricked into thinking he was a superhero. And then Heroine comes along, or she's femme fatale at the start, and then Hero lasts, and then she goes, "Why am I being called that?" And eventually, I mean, her thing of the story, she is good at what she does, in stark contrast to everybody else. But she actually learns to kind of loosen up, and she trains them, and she teaches what she knows, and she shares her experience. And it's a cool, I think, a cool arc to take, because so often, and we thought we weren't sure if we're like we have like one for a big chunk of the book, we have one female character, and we're two white guys writing a superhero book. And we're like, it's funny though. Like, bear with us, because she's the only
So much
one with a clue.
of the decisions we made in this book were, yeah, but it's funny. Let's just do it. Coming from
Which
naming
is why we have an editor at At Bay Press to make sure that what we two white dudes writing a superhero book think is funny is actually indeed funny.
But you're in a
Yeah.
great space where if it's not funny, it also is funny on a certain level,
Yeah.
right? Because of the
Hopefully,
parody
yeah.
and pastiche, you've got that kind of weirdness of the it's kind of responding to modern comics, but it is in the style of those older comics, which are very anachronistic in terms of their mores. And but then also, today people get so wound up about things that fundamentally don't matter, like a superhero comic.
We do round out the cast with some more superheroes later. Like we do try to actually be like, no, that was we were doing a bit, but here, like
The recruiting sequence is great, where they're like putting together like their version of the Justice League. I
yeah.
forget, the Justice Union or something, and then
The union, the strongest form of employment.
yes. But what's great about it is you get, of course, that great sequence that you see in Deadpool too as well, where
Yes,
like people come
definitely.
in and they're recruiting them. And you, I think it's the old there's a bunch of different movies that have played that kind of trope in, and it's a great little sequence. So you get to see like the anti-masker, and of course he's trying to get the superheroes to take their masks off to expose who they are, just like J. Jonah Jameson wanted, right? He's got the same sort of idea, but there's that sort of interesting little joke to like the post-pandemic anti-masker. I find like it's a really interesting balance to kind of be talking about newer, more recent things in this older style. I'm wondering what you think the what kind of drew you to that idea, rather than just being a real hardcore into the Silver Age parody, or just forget the Silver Age parody superhero comics now.
I think when it comes to what drew me to it, when we look, like, how do I explain this? I think that outside of working for one of the big two publishers, Marvel, DC, the industry does not need more superhero comics in any form. And so when this idea came into my head of, well, what about a superhero who's not actually a superhero. It's just sort of being taken advantage of for, for profit, which is what superheroes ultimately are done these days. What is sort of a way to tell this story, or what would be an interesting way to tell that sort of story in a way that isn't already being flooding the market, or isn't my like indie, oh, I'm gonna start my own universe, thing that we hear sort of from every indie creator we talk to. And the idea of a superhero who's sort of ridiculous and not very intelligent and sort of being taken advantage of, but also really heartfelt and really sort of like affectionate, like it's not the right word, but is really sort of committed to wanting to be a superhero. It just was, as we said, funny. Like the entire point of this project was, if Zach and I could talk through a story and it make us laugh, it was something that we wanted, that we decided we would do. And that was how we landed on all of our jokes, was if it made both of us laugh, then it could be in the book. And if it didn't, then we cut it.
How did the whole thing come about in the first place? Is it an idea that you had and took to Zach, or did you two were goofing around? You came on this idea together, or what was it kind of? What were
Yeah,
the
well, we were at
origins of it?
Calgary Expo years ago, goofing around behind a booth and laughing about all these silly tropes. And I think it kind of came together from that, if I remember right. That's a long time ago now. I think we did the first pages, we did an 8-page pitch in 20, I want to say 17 or 18. So it's been, and then we just kept getting funding, or Lyndon, I should say, kept finding funding for it. So it just turned into a whole book over time.
I want to say Zach's right. We made the pages in 2018, which means we probably came up with the idea in 2017. Nope, flip it, reverse it. We did the pages in 2018, and the page, or we came up with the idea in 2018, and the pages came out in 2019. And at the time, I was living in Calgary, and Zach was working at a comic book store. And we every week I would go in and pick up my comics, and we would talk comics. And Zach said he was an artist, and he showed me some of his art. And so I think I had a vague idea of a superhero who whose crimes in the city were fake to capitalize on revenue and tourism, and sort of it really started with that trope of who pays to fix the buildings that Superman's destroyed. And this sort of spun out of this idea. And that was really all I had when I brought it to Zach. And from there, we fleshed out sort of the entire concept of the books and the characters. And originally, the first 8 pages, where Hero Man discovers this plot, they were part of a short comics anthology that I was doing called What Will Not Last. And the pages were fun. Funny enough, or the concept was fun enough that Zach and I had kept talking about making more pages. And we started to do that, but it wasn't until we had, I think, 30 or so pages done that that Bay Press came on board and sort of encouraged us to make it a full book. And then we managed to get some funding from the Canada Council of the Arts for to produce all of the pages. And I think through this whole, I think that was in 2022 that we got the funding from the Canada Council, or late 2021. So I think Zach had only tried to quit the book 3 or 4 times by then.
Sounds
And then
about right.
once we accepted the money, he was locked in and he couldn't go anywhere. So we actually then finished the book, and it's been a long road to get it out. When you think about it, it's been, almost 6 years since the idea was first formed. But it finally the books will be in hand. And that'll be it. Zach will be able to go and do whatever he wants with his time instead of being a slave to Hero Man, like he
So
is in one of the illustrations at the back of this book.
I will speak up in my own defense. He's not wrong in saying I did try to quit the book on numerous occasions. The first 8-page pitch I really enjoyed. It was a funny, punchy little story that started off a universe that I really liked what we did with that. But we did 20 up to 22 pages right after that, 'cause we're like, oh, let's keep going. And we didn't have a direction, and we didn't find like a reason to keep going. And so it was just like, because we were already making a superhero parody and kind of being, it's fun and campy, but like we're a little jaded of super, we're tired of superheroes, and we're making more of
What are we
this thing that
realistically going to
wasn't,
do with a book like this?
it didn't get better after 8 pages in those 22. However, now that we talked to Matt, we talked with each other a long time, and we found a direction. We went back and cut those original pages up, put some more stuff in, made it make a little more sense, and found a direction and like a voice. And it's a little more like, I don't know, can I say woke is such a dumb, stupid, politicized word, but like the book is like full of a good message now that like we think it's still funny, but also it's full of like, oh, you really want to be like these villains? We got a bunch of like grumpy guys who hate superheroes here. This is you. Like, don't.
Right. Yeah.
So we found it. We found a voice for it, and then it became a lot easier to do. But for a, we did kind of stall out in the middle there, I'd say. And so I wasn't wrong to want to walk away for a bit, but we found a reason to make it worth making.
What I think is interesting about it, and where I think it differentiates itself, other than the stylistic aspects and the art style, like the art style is, of course, the most obvious differentiator from the kind of superhero parodies or, critical, superhero books that you see now. But what I think is fundamentally a bit more interesting about it is that it's really, in many ways, it seems like it's parodying superhero comics, but really it's parodying the comics culture that has built itself around superhero comics. So you have like one of the villains that I like the best is the nice guy, right? He auditions to be a hero because, of course, he sees himself as the hero. But he ends up being like a stalkerish, villainous figure who doesn't even understand himself as a villain. There's so much just quickly and concisely packed into that particular character and just other moments in the book where it really does sort of speak to the kind of and kind of point a finger at the culture that has sort of built itself around comics rather than the comics themselves on a certain level. And just from working at a comic store, I'm sure, and going to comics conventions like both of you have done, like I'm sure you've seen the good and the bad of that whole comics culture, right? And it seems like part of the book is just sort of focusing really on that more than it is, making really a commentary on comics themselves.
That's fair to say, yeah. We should maybe work that into our description.
A commentary on comic culture? I don't know about that. I don't know if people are willing to are ready for to people who are into comics are willing to look in the mirror that way.
We also had a funny thought of making this book look like something that would appeal to those comics gate assholes.
You should put a set an
Because
alternate
then they'd be
cover.
like, pick it up and be like, oh, I should read this. And then it's like, no, this is mocking you. You're specifically called out on numerous occasions. Like, this, you're
Yeah.
the
Well,
worst.
this is exactly
But
the kind of
it
book.
should have a Comics Gate alternate cover though.
Yeah, this is exactly the kind of book that someone who's into Comics Gate will pick up because it is,
Right.
on its surface, a glorifying of Golden and Silver Age comics. And then when you read it, someone who reads it closely enough would recognize, oh, maybe I'm the problem. It's me.
Or they'd go leave us a very bad review, and then our book would get more publicity. So either way.
Yeah. Well, I
Either
remember when we
way, it all
first started
works.
this, Zach's response was, hey, with all these references we're making, would any is are we gonna get sued? And I was like, Zach, if we get sued, we've got no money, so that's just a net positive for us. It's just gonna bring us press.
I will also, that reminds me, we have a courtroom scene in the book, as most superhero books have. And Lyndon, as a lawyer, wrote the most I'm not a lawyer courtroom scene we could muster. Like, just every stupid, bad, wrong trope that everybody who's not a lawyer is like, that's not how courts work. That's in our scene. It's painfully, aggressively not a studied law scene,
But what's great
which I
about
think was
the
cathartic for him.
Silver Age style too is like in the Silver Age there was no realism, none, right? Whereas a lot of the grittier, cynical superhero approaches today, although they aren't realistic, they kind of pride themselves on a level of realism. Like if this thing was real, then this would really happen. Like is that approach often? And then you have kind of figures like Moore who are sort of in that in-between space where he's kind of branching one to the other, but is still ultimately more on the side of like, okay, if it was real, then this is how it would really play out. What I think is great about the Silver Age style is like you can absolutely are dispensing with all realism, unless you're making a meta joke about how it's unrealistic, and so it really just allows for a lot of play, as you say, like in zaniness. You can get to just have ridiculous fun, and you can kind of just do the funniest version of everything. I always say to students when I teach them, I use comedy and horror as the kind of two flip examples all the time, and I always say like, your first priority is to get a story that works, and if the story works, your next sort of priority is every single piece of it. Let's just find a better version. Is it funnier or is it scarier? Like, can you just make it funnier? Can you make it scarier? Once you got that core base, it's just about what's the better version of it. And what's so great about something like a courtroom scene there is like if you just get the basics of how that scene is works in the narrative, then you can just start flipping, well, what's the silliest thing? Is there something, is there a way you can draw a Galva coming down and that looks fun? You know, like you can just kind of really start breaking it down. I'm curious to know, like, Zach, how you approached developing this style in the first place, because it is a pretty deceptively, I think it looks simpler than it is, especially when you're working with the those, I forget the name of them, was on the dot colors,
Halftones.
halftones. When you're working with halftones, I'm guessing, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm guessing it adds a little bit of a complexity level in terms of figuring out how to approach some of the design. And I'm just curious to know, like, how you kind of, I mean, in some ways, this is not far off from your core style, but there is, you know, a bit more detail in certain places, like the hair. There's a bit more less detail in other places, you know. So it is a bit, it's very modified from your style in the so far as it's kind of going at that Silver Age approach a little bit, you know. I was just curious to know just kind of how you found yourself settling on this. Like when you decide to approach a parody of the Silver Age style, like what does that really require of you, and how hard is it to kind of figure out?
I felt weird about the style in this book because I did those first pages so many years ago that when I had to when it came time now I got funding all of a sudden. It's like, okay, do 111 pages, I think the book is now total. It's like, well, I haven't drawn like that in years at that point, and it feels weird to be putting out a book now that I feel like is tied to the style of 8 years ago. There's something charming about those first couple pages. Like, I really did enjoy that initial pitch, but then in that middle zone I mentioned struggling with, I feel like I was wrestling with it and trying to find ways to simplify things, and some of it worked and some of it was weird. There's a really good fight scene I drew in those 22 pages that I like a lot, but then there's some talking head pages that aren't as strong. It's just a weird, it was a weird challenge for me as an artist, I think. So as to your question about like simplifying it, yeah, you can get away with a lot of like motion lines and flat backgrounds, and I tried to keep some of the shapes dynamic like Jack Kirby, but also sometimes it was funny to have it be stiff and chunky. So it was kind of a weird blend of all that. And the colors too you asked about. I did a very simple CMYK kind of halftone palette. So it ended up being pretty quick to color. Not a lot of shading in there, just kind of bright, bold colors, which it looks right, and it doesn't take as long as my full. Like, I'm coloring another book right now that I'm ink washing the pages first and then going and coloring, and that's a little more involved. This was kind of, I mean, back then it was quick to do colors. Sorry, not traditionally when it was traditional, but like they weren't as in depth, and so to do that on a computer now goes pretty quick.
Tell them about the car.
Yeah, so I'm a lazy hack. Will be the start of this tale. We had this hero mobile that looks like a Barbie's Jeep, but painted red, white, or red, yellow, and blue. And like 3 or 4 pages in, I went, yeah, Lyndon, I don't want to draw this thing. You need to blow it up. And so a villain blows it up like 2 pages later, or like a page later. Like, it was immediate and it's just gone. And
That's
I didn't
great.
have to draw it anymore. The garbage man, who's a disgruntled city
City
worker who has to clean
worker.
up
I
after
noticed
them,
you drive
runs it
him
over with a
in.
garbage truck.
Yeah.
And it's just gone. We just wrote it out.
What I love is the whenever someone comes in a door, it's like boom, like always a
Yeah.
splash, and it's like a three quarters of the page, and it's like
Even
angled
for the dinner
from
party.
up, you know. Yeah,
Yeah.
he's just bringing a salad. It's like kabam, you know. It's so
Where
great.
Kid Lad's new neighbor, Herman
Yeah.
Mann, who moved next door, comes for dinner. And yeah,
Yeah.
his secret identity is Herman Mann, not to be confused with Hero Man, because that would be
It's great because you set it up
ridiculous.
a few times. You see like that same language where in a dramatic scene, you know, it's like, you know, oh, someone's coming in, the judge is coming to the court, you know, or like, you know, people are coming through the door. Oh no, it's this guy. And then all of a sudden it's like the guy coming, just coming over to give you a salad for
With
the, for he's like,
the
hey, what's up, neighbor? You know, neighborino. But it's like even more dramatic. He's got like all these extra lines, you know, off of him and everything.
Sorry,
And
dear listener, if I'm cutting in. I just, anytime I
yeah.
listen to Zach or now Jonathan talk about how stupid this book is, I can't stop laughing.
It's great.
So
I will
that's the
say,
point, yeah.
Lennon knows my big pet peeve always is there's so many words. But I will say that I give a book like Hero Man a pass for there being more words, because when you're doing comedy, you need more words. Like in my Dirksen book, you'll notice there's a lot more words than in the Eye Collector.
Yeah.
You know, because you
Yeah.
lettered them. But
Yeah.
so I mean, to me, like this level of words also works on the Silver Age approach. You actually did less. Like they would have more repetition. You didn't build in all that horrible repetition they have. But it captures some of the better aspects of the Silver Age, and not so much the worst aspects, unless you're making fun of them intentionally. But I love the backgrounds are great too, where you'll sometimes kind of have a little bit of detail, but otherwise you'll just wash it out. Like that's exactly how those comics were, and it really helps. One of the best things about those comics was exactly that aspect, where it wasn't realistic on any level, and so they would almost use a I guess it would be called a mannerist approach, where like the background would be just white with a couple lines because that's how they feel, and it would kind of emphasize it was this very melodramatic a style, which works great for comedy especially. So I really thought, like, it's weird to say it's innovative in the sense that it's copying these old styles, but it has like this sort of innovative approach.
It's innovative in how derivative it is.
Yeah, on a certain level. I mean, that again, that's what pastiche is, right? That's postmodern pastiche art.
Yeah.
I wrote a whole book on it, so I won't dive into it on this podcast. If people want, they can check out that book. And it's exactly this kind of thing that you're talking about. In fact, what's great about it is it allows you that sort of level of distance that also kind of you can use it for connection. You can kind of take the rug off from under people at certain moments and kind of have a more, pointed point on a certain, here and there, without it because drowning in sentimentality or something, which so often I find the modern comics, if they have to be cynical or they are maudlin. And it's hard for them to have any sort of serious positivity on any level, or just starts to ring false because they've just built such a horrible world that these people are living in. They've augmented every terrible aspect of the world. And then, how do you have any hope in there? And I'm not saying all books need to have like hope in it, but it's interesting that you managed to engineer like a book that has a bit, it has like that ironic distance, and it has that critical, parody side of things. It's really, making fun of and critiquing certain toxic aspects of today's comics culture, and it's sort of a fun and light and in many ways hopeful kind of book. So it's interesting to me. Like, I was wondering, to what degree did that kind of, like, was there any moment where you were, Zach almost kind of talked about it a little bit, but it sounds like you kind of had a level where at a certain point you needed it to be about something to not quit.
Well, because 8 pages can be funny with no greater message, and that's what we had was the original pitch was just a funny little, wouldn't it be silly if the superhero wasn't really a superhero? Like, but then you can't do 110 pages of that, 111. Like you just can't,
Right.
that runs out of steam, and we needed to find a reason to make, I mean, you can't ask a reader to read a book that has nothing going on and no message and nothing you believe in and is just silly for 110 pages. I think that would be a big ask of a reader. And so I'm glad we found a way to kind of go down the middle and find a good message and a good reason, but also lots and lots of opportunities for jokes. You can't have one without the other because nobody wants a ham-fisted message and nobody wants an empty comedy. And I think they both served each other well in this book.
Yeah, Hero Man as a concept was right from the beginning. It was always about what happens when you realize that you're not the person you thought you were. And so we found a way to extend that message throughout sort of the entirety of the book. And what's interesting is looking at sort of the number of characters that do evolve and change. So, Hero Lad is originally sort of a Robin type named Kid Lad. And then he grows up and he takes on the mantle of Hero Lad when Hero Man is away. Hero Man starts as Hero Man and then he downfalls into Villain Man and then he redeems himself and becomes Hero Man again. Whereas, and then of course our female character starts as the femme fatale and then she's forced into the mantle of Hero Lass and then she sort of graduates beyond that into just heroine, which is this sort of arc, like everyone sort of got an arc in that sense and sort of came into themselves as characters, even to the end where they sort of decide to do things other than just be superheroes. Everyone still got to develop a little bit. And like Zach said, it would have been really hard to stretch out one joke for 100 pages, which is a superhero that's not actually a superhero. So we, and there was so much going on at the time that we were making this book. This was through the middle of the pandemic. It was the middle of the sort of anti-police movement at the height of its strength. There was very much a questioning of all levels of government and authority going on. And at the same time, I think we were sick of negative, cynical, sort of depressing stories. And I'm not just telling in superheroes, but sort of in general, that sort of fixation that society had with the dark story model. And so to be able to do something that's fun and sincere, while also giving us the opportunity to like, let's make fun of Donald Trump in this. Let's talk about how politicians like to both sides all arguments. It really gave us this opportunity to complain, but in a way that's funny. And we really leaned into that all the way through the end of the book.
I wonder if you could talk a bit more just about working together and what and are you planning to do another book, for example? Or are you sick of one another at this point?
Are you
We're sick of one
asking like
another, but we're gonna do another book.
a book in general or another Hero Man book?
Another, well, not necessarily a Hero Man book, but another book, together. This creative team. What's next for this creative team here? Do you know yet, or are you just pushing on Hero Man, promoting it at this
So
point?
Lyndon had a pitch in that didn't get funded for now. We had like a fantasy thing we're kind of poking away at. We have a 10-page little short story where I'd like to draw at some point here when I find time. We have little things, but we haven't figured out the next big thing necessarily. But we do want to do a big thing, I think.
Yeah, as a writer, I'm always very conscious of the how much time the time of the artist I'm working with is worth. And Zach is currently working on his own project, Bragi or the sequel to Thrud. And so I'm aware that I can't drag him away from that until like unless there's funding to be able to pay him to do that. And so when it comes to our next projects, it's really going to come down to a mix of circumstances, I think. And I don't know, it's one of those things, especially, I mean, definitely, Zach, you could talk about how you feel about Hero Man in the future, but I would need to fu that the idea would need to be so funny, that we would need to be able to justify the idea of coming back and sort of finding a way to rehash a fresh new idea while also being able to make fun of things, because we really don't want to do the same book a second time.
Sorry, Lynn, can you hear me through this mic now?
Yep.
Okay, so I can't hear you, but you can hear me. So
Yes.
maybe I will just ask, we're kind of nearing the end here anyway, but I wonder, apologies for the sudden tech problem. Do you have some final thoughts on Hero Man or final, places where people can find you? If they can want to learn more about Hero Man, obviously, as they pre-order all over the place, and people should. It's coming out, pretty soon. May should is the launch date. Sometimes when you pre-order books, they'll send them to you earlier than that. Like it depends, on each store. But people can probably get this pretty soon. You're going to be at some cons. Maybe it's worth mentioning some of the cons you're going to be at, where people can find you and the book, or get the book signed, or just go online and find more places where they can get Hero Man. If maybe we'll just kind of wrap it up with final thoughts and where people can find you, and then I'll do my sign off here. But I unfortunately, I apologize. I can't. I'll listen to the podcast and hear what you say it later.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so go ahead.
Yeah. So we. Oh, I'm losing my train of thought here too. We will have the book probably not right for the start of our con season, unfortunately. But we'd like to have it, so we're trying. But we're both at Calgary Expo. Saskatoon is right after that. I'm going to VanCalf. Prairie Comics Fest is coming up in Winnipeg. We have a local equivalent called Panel One that I'm a part of. So there's a lot of bigger and smaller shows we're doing over across Canada. But I'm not 100% sure we'll have them by late April when we need them, the copies of this book. But we both have websites. He has infinitestudios.ca and I have zmschuster.com. I'm ZM Schuster on Instagram. Lyndon is L Red Chenka on
Yep.
Instagram.
And I, as Zach said, I'll be at Calgary and X and Saskatoon with Zach. I think right now I'm hoping to also do a Brandon show at the end of May, Fan Expo Toronto at the end of August, and then Regina in September. Books should be, or right now the Hero Man is listed to be released at the beginning of May. You can pre-order at McDally Robinson. You could pre-order at Chapters in Indigo if you want to pre-order from an online corporation giant. You can pre-order from Amazon if you choose to. But Zach, yeah, you
Well,
can find everything
thanks.
online. We'll have everything listed on our websites when they're available. And the future of Hero Man is that we hope that you pick it up. We hope that you find some of the jokes funny. We hope that you sort of enjoy diving into sort of this nostalgic pastiche of parody and comedy, and we hope that we see you at some shows sometime this year. So thanks for checking it out.
Well, thanks very much for talking Hero Man. Again, everyone should check this book out. It's fun. And how often do you see a fun superhero book these days? And keep it up, guys, and keep writing the wrong way.